this is J.W. Oliver with an episode of Global Impact, and it's all about how you can use your life and your business to make an impact for the kingdom. And today we have a guest I don't know very well. Her name is J.W.'s mom. So J.W.'s mom, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. And we also have Ruva. Hello, Ruva.
Hello.
Ruva is the king of branding and vision and helps me with a podcast. And so she's going to help moderate. So when me and my mother get into a fight, we can be moderated and told how to break up and go back to your own corner. So, well, it is really fun to have mom on here. She just turned 100. Mama, can you hear us?
I hear you, JW. Better quit stories.
She's not 100, but she's a beautiful 86, and I'm exactly 50 years younger than her. She had me very late in life, so I was 36. I'm 36 now. So, well, Mom, we are excited to have you, and we thought it would be fun to talk to you and get your perspective on life, family, faith, and raising a family and in difficult circumstances as well.
Been there and done that.
Sound like a little Texas saying. Well, I wanted just to, you know, some of this I've heard, but I maybe didn't listen the first couple times. Tell us about what it was like growing up in Wichita Falls, because you were born there, raised there, before you began on a journey at 19 years old. Talk about family growing up in Wichita Falls. What was that like in the 1905?
Well, I'll start out maybe talking about maybe in the 1940 or 45. I was raised, what I thought, in a very normal family. We weren't rich, but we certainly wasn't poor, because we always had food on the table and we always had a car to go somewhere in. And our biggest vacations was going to see my mother's mother in Amarillo and my daddy's mother and daddy in El Campo, Texas. So my life to me was normal. On Saturdays, we always, me and my sister, mother would go buy groceries, and Carolyn and I would clean the house. My rooms was the living room, the dining room, and the bathroom, and I would get up earlier than Carolyn so that I could put unpleasant things like hanging up coats and stuff that got put on the dining room table. I'd go put them in the bedroom before Carolyn got up. But we were a normal family. We went to school every day, of course, and on Sundays we went to church, and on Saturdays we helped clean house. But
you mentioned Carolyn. That's your closest sister to you. You've got three sisters and a brother. Talk about the ages of each of those as well. When you say 1945, you were 10. How old was everybody else at that time?
Well, Carolyn is 2 years younger than me. Mary Ida is probably 5 years younger than me. And my brother was 6 or 7 years younger than me. And then my baby sister, Shirley.
She wasn't born.
What?
She wasn't born in 45.
And Shirley was... I was 16 years old when my baby sister was born.
Yeah, so she wasn't even born until like 51. So you were talking about having just, at that point, you and Aunt Carolyn and Aunt Mary and Uncle Jimmy. So what did Papa do then? What did Papa do at that time for work?
Papa had his own business. I'm sure by then he had Quality Planing Mill, which was across the street. It was faced broad, but it was across the street from the Memorial Auditorium. And mother would keep the car. We only had one car. And mother would keep the car. And when we'd go get daddy at 5 o'clock, we would go a little bit early. And there was a big hill by the Memorial Auditorium. And we would take cardboard and slide down that hill. And the hill is still there, of course. Quality Planing Mill is gone. And a freeway is there now.
Well, that continued. The sliding down the hills continued when we were kids. Papa used to walk us, I don't know, 4 or 5 blocks to the side of the overpass, the expressway there, and took cardboard boxes. And that was our excitement, was to slide up and down that hill and knock each other over. And I always remember a funny story about Papa, probably one of the funniest stories. We were, Blake, our cousin, was a little older, and I remember we had walked, and, you know, that was a half mile or so to go to the place there where we slid down the hill. And we were over there, and some older kids came by, and I don't know, I might have been 7 or 8, Blake might have been 10, and some older kids came by there and took our cardboard away from us. And I remember me and Blake and probably Keith and Wade, our other cousins, we went back, and we came back, and we were all kind of sad. And Papa said, well, what happened? I keep in mind, Papa was about 6'1" or 6'2" and big German guy. And he was strong as an ox. And he would probably had sawdust all over him from being out in the planing mill. And we said, well, some kids down there took our cardboard. And I never forget, he didn't grab it, but he had a pipe wrench in his hand. I think he just had it because he was working or a crescent wrench or something. And he marched down there. We couldn't hardly keep up with him. And he marched down to that hill, and he grabbed that cardboard for those boys. And I'm sure they thought they were about to whack him over the, or he was about to whack him over the head with that pipe wrench. And he stayed there for the rest of the hour or whatever, while we slid up down that hill to make sure those bullies didn't come get us. But that's kind of how Papa would do things. And we remember that one. Blake and I still talk about that one. So yeah, sliding down the hill didn't get old. Well, and then, so, I mean, yeah, I know you don't say poor, because like you say, we had food on the table, but you definitely were not middle class, would have definitely been the lower end of the income spectrum for sure. But then you left, you met dad when? You were how old?
Probably 18 and a half. I was out of school.
And you were out there, what, at the Scott's Drive-In with your leg skirt pulled up and hollering and waving so guys would pull in there? Oh, I'm just checking, Mom.
Worked at the telephone office then.
That's where you had to plug all those cords in, right?
Yeah, I was information, please, or what number. And James, that's your daddy's name, but he was out at the base, and I worked till 11 o'clock, but I had to be home at 12 o'clock. And so he would come and pick me up at 11 o'clock, take me to a little restaurant called Casey's, and buy me a hamburger and a Coke. And I had to be home at 12. So that was my date life with him.
That was North Carolina. And he was stationed at Shepherd Air Force Base. And so he would have been 23 or 4 at the time. And
he was 5.
Yeah, 5 years difference. So he'd have been 23 or 5. And that was a time where obviously men were in the Air Force, and they obviously were looking for that perfect mate. And I guess you and Dad hit it off.
We hit it off good. Yeah.
And then married at what age? 19?
19, uh-huh.
I know you got married at 19, and I know for a fact, because you've told me this, you had a 19-inch waist.
Yep, I did.
I've seen pictures, and that was about, 19 inches is not, that's like my leg. So you were quite slim, and you were 4 foot, are you 4'6" now, is that right?
JW, I'm 5 foot tall.
5 foot tall, I'm sorry, 4'6", 5 foot, what's the difference, right? One of those two.
A lot.
And then where did y'all go from there? You were 19, and Dad was in the Air Force, and so that started a whole series of moving from place to place to place, right?
Yep. First thing that happened, your dad was to be stationed in Biloxi, Mississippi, and that's where I had my first child, Debbie.
Yep. Debbie, who's now, I think she just turned 80. She's the oldest, or something like that. But no, you had Debbie moved to Biloxi. What from there? Just kind of run through where all those travels took you.
Oh, Dad went to Greenland, and I moved back home, and then I got pregnant with Jamie, my second one, and she was born in Wichita Falls. And by then, your daddy was back out of the service and stationed in Greenville, South Carolina. And so as soon as I was able to travel, James came, got Jamie and Debbie and me, and we moved to Greenville, South Carolina, and joined a church there. We joined a Presbyterian church there. So.
And then moved from there. When did you start the jaunt overseas? I was born in France, so at some point you had to make that move.
I'm trying to think where Brenda was born. Brenda was born in Greenville, South Carolina.
Yeah, she was born in Greenville. And then so that would have been 1960.
And then we got orders to go overseas when Brenda was about 3 or 4. And then we moved, and our first place was Évreux, France.
Actually, Drew Air Force Base.
Drew Air Force Base. And you were born in Évreux.
Yeah,
which
correct.
Was like our way at another base.
Which was a whole funny story, because then I thought growing up, I was a U.S. citizen, but I was what they call a naturalized U.S. citizen. And everybody used to kid me that I was going to have to go into the French Foreign Legion. So the time I was 8 or 9 until I think when I was 12, I finally got my naturalization papers, which you had to go in front of a judge at that time. I've still got that certificate somewhere that where I had to get my, I was worried to death. And now I'm wishing I had French citizenship and U.S. citizenship, but I can't do that anymore now. So maybe I'll get Zimbabwe citizenship. That'll be my next dual citizenship there. I'll probably get that one easier than I can France. So that might be easier. But you got to travel, awesome. Right? I mean, that was a big thing, because you were coming from Wichita Falls. You hadn't been very many places probably. And now Dad was just enlisted. I mean, he was an enlisted, so that was a lower pay grade. He was probably a sergeant at that time, maybe, or maybe not even a sergeant then. He ended up making master sergeant as an E-8. But as he moved up, what was the thing? I think the best story is what Dad likes to do on the weekends.
Oh, the weekends were fabulous, because your daddy liked to go look for clocks. And of course, that I like to look for antiques. And so we brought back a ton of clocks and a lot of antiques we brought back from France. But the bad thing that happened, the year you graduated from school, my house caught on fire and we lost some of those things, but was able to keep a lot of them.
Yeah, but focus on the traveling. I mean, y'all would go where? You would travel around. I mean, because it wasn't just, you'd go to all these barns and things in France, but you were also traveling around going to Spain and Germany and Italy.
Your daddy did like to travel, and a lot of people on the base, they never left the base, but they encouraged the people that would be a good education for the children, because we went to places like the Pyrenees Mountains and where you got this water that was healing water, and people would go from all over the world to come to the Pyrenees Mountains to get this water to be healed. And I got to see things when we were in the service that I would never, ever get to see again. So yeah, we went to Spain and Italy, and we made all the countries that was close by that we could drive to.
Because Dad would leave like on a, and I think it's, you need to tell the funny part of the story, like how we traveled.
You mean the Volkswagen bus?
Yeah. Talk about the Volkswagen bus, because that's the most interesting part of the story.
Bus, and it was great for traveling. We could load everything in it. But the base people, they always recommend that you travel with another family in case something happened to your car. That family could go ahead and get help. So we always traveled with another family. And that even made it more fun, because we did our cooking and bathing of the babies and everything right outside.
Make reservations at like KOA campgrounds, right? I mean, that's some of the places you would stop at.
Yeah, there was. Yeah, your daddy did great planning. He knew how to plan for a trip. So I was too busy playing with babies to do any kind of planning. So my job was to take care of four little children.
Well, how did now take that? You kind of got the background. You did a lot of traveling. You went a lot of places, did a lot of things. But what does that look like now? Now you've come back during this time. We've moved back to actually San Antonio, but Dad was diagnosed as manic depressive, and that was early on. He was what, 37 or something when that happened, and very, very young, and so kind of quickly spiraled into a divorce, and Dad moved back to North Carolina, and you were back in Wichita.
I ever did, JW, was to divorce your daddy.
Oh, I know that, but let me finish up. You divorced. Dad moved to North Carolina and started a life there and in Charlotte, which we visited a lot because that's where he was from. And then here you are in 1970 as a single parent, living really next door to Papa, our grandpa. And actually, I still remember when we went to that house. That house was worth about $3,000, and it had lumber stored in it. Papa stored his lumber for his planing mill in there. So he actually had to for us to be able to move into it, he had to clean it all out and clean it up. So now, what's it like in 1970, 71, with four kids, ages 5, 10, 11, and 15, and trying to make it on your own? And how is that even possible?
Well, I moved into this house on Yale Street, and Daddy did a wonderful thing. He put carpet in every room, and that was wonderful. And he, on the walls, he put, what were the walls, JW? I can't think what they were.
Paneling.
And I just thought it was really nice, but raising four kids with one bathroom was really hard.
And keep in mind, it was one bathroom with a 40-gallon hot water heater in the corner that wasn't protected, and there was no shower. It was a bathtub with the four claw legs, so there was no shower. It was a bath, and being the youngest of and having four women who were older trying to get in a shower of them, sometimes I might not get a shower till noon on a school day, so maybe a little exaggeration, but that was kind of what it was. It was hard to get in. Shower started about 6 o'clock.
Actually, the bathing happened at night because there was not time for everybody to get a bath and get them to school by 8 o'clock.
It wasn't the time. It was that there was no hot water.
There was enough hot water, JW.
No, I mean, you couldn't take showers back to back. You couldn't do that. There wasn't enough hot water for people to go back to back to back. It wasn't possible.
But what was really hard was getting four kids to four different schools before 8 o'clock. But we did it. Of course, by then, Debbie was driving, so she helped also. But I couldn't have done it without parents' help because Carolyn, my sister, she took care of you after school and picked you up. So without the family that I had, I couldn't have done it without them.
Yeah, I think that's a good evidence of people get put into a lot of tough situations. And, you know, I think now when you have more fractured families and more families who are separated when they go through a divorce, they don't sometimes have that that background that we had. We had grandma and papa. Of course, we were lucky. We had those next door, but we had a big family. We had you had three sisters all living in Wichita Falls. We had, there was 11 of us cousins, and we were all pretty close, and living in, all but one was living in real close proximity. So yeah, you had Aunt Carolyn who could pick me up. We had people we could stay with. We had people who could help as well. But I remember it was tough. I remember specifically, you know, Christmas has always been a big deal with us because we raised in the church and was a big focus on Christ. But I can still remember that you allowed us to pick out one thing that we wanted for Christmas, right? And we all had a $50 limit that we would get for Christmas. And so back then, that was still a lot of money at that point.
That was a lot of money back in the 70s.
But talk about how you, what did you do to save that money? I think that's an interesting story. For Christmas.
What did I do?
Well, you needed basically $200 for four kids. And so you would take that and you would put about $15 or $16 a month. I don't know if you put it in an envelope or a cup. You didn't take it to the bank, I know. And you would store that money. You would put aside that money. I don't know if it was each week from your paycheck or what, but you would put aside that $50 or $15 or $16 a month to get us there. Do you remember doing that?
Actually, I would have to save all year because not only did I buy presents for my children, we bought presents for cousins, aunts, and uncles. So
yeah,
how I did.
Yeah, it was. I actually found, you know, years ago, I found your income, your W-2 statement for 19, I think it was 1973. And it was, I believe it was $3,400. And I remember thinking, how did mom raise four kids on $3,400? I mean, that was $250, $300 a month. Well, that was gross income before taxes.
Well, I got money from your daddy, child support.
Sometimes
I got it and sometimes I didn't.
And it was $160 a month. It was $40 per child. I remember specifically. Yep. Sometimes he sent 140 or 60. Sometimes he sent 80. I mean, he was doing all he could too, I know, to send that. So, but it was tough. I mean, but how would you not have been able to do that without the advocate of family and the church?
I couldn't, because actually the church was my family also. I'm going to the same church as I did as a child. And those people are like my family also. I mean, like when I had the fire, who showed up? Not only, but family, but members of my Sunday school class to help me clean up.
Actually, the first person who showed up was Coach Joe Bob Tyler, my high school football coach. And I was already out of school. I'll never forget that. He was one of the first guys that showed up. So, but yeah, there was a lot of tough times in there. I mean, raising kids, getting everybody a car, you know, we shared cars. I remember Brendan and Jamie had to share a car. Debbie had the, what they call that? The tank, the old Ford Galaxy 500 that dad gave her. The door was probably heavier than most cars are today. You couldn't even hardly swing that thing shut. But I think the key to that was we weren't perfect. We sure didn't have any money. I mean, I remember specifically we got one new pair of shoes. We went to Payless shoe store and we would get one new pair of shoes. Typically that's what we had for the year. Right. I mean, that's what we had for our shoes. I mean, we probably got something that we did get the white belt and the white shoes for Sunday school, but that was usually a hand-me-down from somebody else.
Talk about hand-me-downs. Keith was, just a few months older than you, and you were born in France, and Carolyn would pack up Keith's clothes as he outgrew them and send them to me. And of course, I dressed you in his clothes. And then when I finally came home and I was still using Keith's hand-me-downs, And I was trying to get shoes on you one day that Carolyn had given me of Keith's, and we were at Carolyn's house. And I was trying to get that shoe on you. And I was working and working with that shoe and pushing and pushing. And Carolyn said, "Janine, why don't you measure his foot? I believe it's bigger than Keith's." Your foot was bigger than Keith's, and I was trying to jam your foot in that shoe. So
I'm sure I had to wear them too. I'm positive.
Not then. We got shoes for you then.
So Ruva, you've heard the story all the way up to that that point. How does that bode for thoughts you might have on that?
I think it's quite an incredible journey. There's just so much one can gain and get inspired from, and there's times where we think we're gonna face impossible challenges, but if we look at I'll call her JW's mom, because I just like that name. When you look at your mom's story, it's very inspiring. And I actually just wanted to ask her.
Her favorite. So.
Where did you get the strength to endure the challenges of being a single mother? We know today a lot of women are single mothers. What words of encouragement would you give them? How do they keep going during those dark times?
I cried a lot and I prayed a lot. And of course I had family, but I kept all my kids in church, you know, from the time they were, when I came back and lived as a single mom on Yale Street, I made sure that we were all in church every Sunday. And God helped me. He helped me through all of my trials and tribulations. He did. And my mom and my sisters.
Oh, very, very amazing. And I often hear from JW, always says that every Sunday she made sure we went to church. And that just shows how much you valued the church, how much you valued God. And it's just nice to hear your story and how the church has always been there with you. And how special is it that as you've grown older, you've still gone to the same church? A lot of people will change churches, you know, if someone has to live 80 plus years, they'll tell you, "I've been to 10 different churches," but you've stuck to that church. Very amazing, very amazing. So if you could just sum it up, what role has Christianity played in your life? I know you said God has gotten you through everything. Where would you be without Christianity?
I have no idea. I cannot imagine my life without a church family, because it's always been there. Even when I was growing up as a young child, my mother's mother lived with us for a while, and she was my bed partner. And she went to the Salvation Army Church, which I loved because it had drums and tambourines and guitars. And I loved that music. And I was saved in a Salvation Army Church. But I remember my grandmother, she would get up before me and she would be combing her long, long hair. And I thought she was talking to herself, but, you know, I was curious what she was talking about. And I found out she was praying. The whole time she's brushing that long hair, she's praying. So.
And I think Ruby was talking about you went back to family and church, but what I would ask maybe what has your personal relationship with Christ been like that's molded you? Because that's, I think, the most important thing is not church. I mean, church is important, but the most important thing is our single personal relationship, which differentiates us from all the other religions, is that we are able to have a personal relationship with Christ. How has that changed, forged, or helped you along the way as well?
Well, even now, you know, during the COVID, we had to watch church services on the TV or Facebook, and I continued doing that. But going to church was much better, I guess, because you have fellowship with Christian people, and the people that you run around with are all believers. So it's just been the center of my life, all my life. It was my mother and daddy, and so it was with me. And all my sisters feel the same way.
That's amazing. I think family is really important, and there's a reason why God always mentions that where there's unity, that's where God's blessing will be. And, you know, the devil tries so hard to break up families, to break up that unity, because he knows where there's unity, that's where God's blessing will be. And with your story, we see that it's the family that came through for you, the church that came through for you through that unity. So very special. And, you know, for me, hearing your story, it just reminds me that God is there through thick and thin. God will always be there. And how proud of you are you of JW, and just how far he's come from raising him up to where he is now?
I'm super proud of all my children. They've all done real well in life, and I'm very
Hey, no focus on those. She's talking about me. It's all about me. There ain't no girls on here.
I'm very proud of JW. I don't know what I'd do without him.
Oh, so touching. And your grandchildren. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Jenna.
No, well, I was just going to say, I think that's something that every boy, every girl really wants. I think it's innate that we really, in underlying, we want our mother and father both to be very proud of us, right? Of our accomplishments, what we've done. And I think that obviously motivates you to do well, is because you want to hear, you know, you want to hear those words of affirmation, you've done well or you've succeeded. But I definitely would add to that, Ruva, that if it wasn't for the faith that really my mom's grandparents and my mom's parents gave her, then she passed that on to us, the importance and value of church. I don't think you can be highly, well, I know you can't, you cannot be highly favored and blessed without God's blessing. You may have things, but you can't be favored and blessed. So that's what I got out of the most important thing of mom's faith, was able to pass that to us by, you know, having us again in church. It's funny, some of the things I thought about, like, we knew on Sunday church wasn't an option. And I remember both my kids saying, you know, we didn't wake up on Sunday and decide if we were going to go to church. We just got up and went to church. And I think that's the first step. You know, a lot of people say, well, that's just forcing people to do something. No, children are children, and you're creating habits, and you want to create good habits. And I think part of it is putting them in the right place with the right people in those circumstances. But go ahead. You were talking about her 78 grandchildren.
Yes. You know, you're in your 80s now, and you've been blessed with amazing grandchildren.
And great.
What message would you have for them if they're listening in on this?
Well, right now I'm getting teary-eyed again, but I have great grandchildren now. I have 7. Aww. And after COVID, I started teaching Sunday school because our church is getting less and less people in it. And so to keep my grandchildren in it, my great-grandchildren, I teach a Sunday school class now to 3 and 4 or 5 year olds.
Wow. And I love it.
And my daughter, she comes in and sings with them.
If you were gonna give advice, I think she's asking, if you were gonna give advice to those grandkids, what advice would it be?
Keep God in the middle of your life.
Yep, stay in church and stay rooted in the gospel, because that when you it's not if you're gonna go through hard times, but when you go through hard times, you're going to have something to lean on as well.
And everybody does. Everybody goes through hard times sometime or another. So
that's why I said it's not if, it's just when. Yeah. That's true as well.
Mm, Very well said. Very well said. And what are some of the biggest life lessons you've learned in your 80 plus years of living on this earth? I think they say wisdom comes with age. So I'm sure life has taught you some things that you could teach the rest of us. What would some of those things be?
The great part about me being 86 is I have a lot of energy. And I will have to say, I love to dance. I love to go dancing. And I feel like when my kids were young, I went dancing too much because I would. I'd go dancing like 3-4 nights a week. But I always took care of my children first. And
except for the couple of times CPS was called because I was by myself at home.
No.
I was 3 or 4 years old and they had to come arrest her. But besides that, none of that. No, Mom did like to dance. She could. She was. I remember your first one was when you back when they did what was that? The do-si-do, the four square dancing, right? You did the
square dancing.
Four square, yeah, square dancing. Yeah, she did the square dancing, and now she and then she went through the disco phase, where she was doing the Saturday Night Fever, and then now what do you dance to, Mom?
Well, now I belong to Daughters of the Nile, and we dance and practice every Monday night, and we put on a little show once a year.
And you say dance, so you got to tell her what kind of dancing it is.
Tap dancing and jazz.
Tap dancing. At 86, she's a wow. Tap dancer.
I still have a little energy left in me.
Absolutely amazing. And I actually just have one more question for you, which is, what has been the best part of motherhood and of being a mother?
Loving on them.
No.
I just love them.
Well, she loves me the most. The three sisters, she says it, but in private, she'll tell me, you're my favorite. Just don't say anything to them. So I don't. I mean, I'm careful not to hurt their feelings, but I'm by far her favorite.
Well, you know, mother used to, when we would stay, my mother lived to be 100. And when we would stay with our mother, she would say, you're my favorite child. And then pretty soon we'd say, Mom, do you tell every one of us that? And she said, yes, you were all my favorite children.
Yeah, she let everybody know that everybody was her favorite. So that was a good thing as well. Well, and something really unique, Ruba, just my mom and her three sisters are still extremely close, and they actually y'all have still get together one night a week and a lot.
Yeah, we have sisters night the first Tuesday, and that's a definite thing we do, and then we get together at least once or twice a week.
Well, the most important reason is because they're all outliving their husbands. There's only one left. So they just keep getting past them. So they're going to have, we kid that they're just going to have to move in together with pretty soon and just share a big dorm room house. And they would probably be just fine.
That would be good.
Hey, Mom, where are you going next year? Next year, you're going to Israel, though.
I saw that on Facebook. That's the first I knew of it.
Well, we were supposed to go like 2 years ago and COVID hit. We didn't get to go. And so I think Mom and maybe
JW.
What's that?
Have they set a date for this Israel trip?
No, I think it's in the spring. So yeah, so she's got that to look forward to as well. So she definitely has to get excited.
Going to Costa Rica with my son as soon as that house is finished.
That's soon enough. We'll get there.
Amazing. Yeah. And Zimbabwe. We would love to welcome you here in Zimbabwe as well sometime.
Well, thank you. That's a long ways off.
I told her she could go do some safaris and see some pretty amazing things in Zimbabwe for sure. So yeah, I'm trying to get her to make that little trek, and maybe that's coming up next, Mom. That may be the next trek.
I'll have to think about that.
Business class, you can just lay back and sleep, and you know, I'll sit there back there with the chickens while you go forward.
Yeah, right.
Ruby, anything else you've got to think about?
Well, but more of a question about JW himself, and what are some of the interesting things he did growing up as your son?
I think we're running out of time. I think we're about running out of time here. We probably want to.
JW was, and his cousins, were sitting on the first row at church, and I'm up in the choir, and he's got these rubber bands, throwing them at the preacher. They're shaking my head, no, but he doesn't see me, so I make contact with my daddy.
Who was in the back.
Go JW, get JW out of church. Well, JW, you can tell that story now.
Yeah, he didn't take much a minute for Papa. When Papa was coming, he wasn't very happy, and he was coming up to grab you by the back of the neck and take you outside the church. But yeah, we used to shoot rubber bands at the preacher while he was preaching. I don't know how he didn't avoid us as well, but somehow he did without saying anything.
That's just one of the things.
But most of the time I was usually in a Bible study or a prayer group, or I was, you know, meditating on the Bible. I didn't get out of the house. I just, most of the time was just a perfect child, right, Mom?
Yeah, you were so perfect.
Oh, it was funny with Mom. I just did a podcast with a guy that went to Bonham Elementary too. He grew up just down the street from Aunt Carol and them on Glasgow and Bonnie Holmes. And we were talking about going to Bonham and the number of people that came out of Bonham that went on and did some things. And it was amazing to hear about what they were doing with a big hunting lodge and some other people who were some executives at different companies. And Jeff actually said, I think that was the worst thing they've ever done, was to get rid of Bonham Elementary, because by being in those hard and difficult situations, a lot of good things came out of it. And I think that was true. You know, Bonham was a tough school to be at. It was a lot of broken families and broken homes, but there was a lot of love. And I think we all went through a lot of hardships through that as well.
Yeah. Brenda's texting me. I'm supposed to babysit at 12:45, but it may be sooner. I don't know.
She's busy. You see, Ruva, she doesn't have an uneventful schedule. She's she's usually quite busy with everything she has going on. She doesn't have a lot of time for other things in her life, so she's got to stay focused there. But
because I like those great grandbabies. I like to keep them and I like to play with them, and it's fun for me.
Problem is, she gets in trouble because she goes and babysits, but she usually just stays on Facebook while she's babysitting. She doesn't see them, so they disappear a lot.
I'm going to babysit, but he's going to be asleep. They're taking the two older ones to a game, and so I'm supposed to be there, I think, at 12. I don't even know.
Well, Mama,
we
appreciate you jumping on here. We know you've got a busy schedule, and we're not going to keep you busy on a Friday, on Good Friday. What's the best thing about Good Friday?
God hung on the cross at 3 o'clock.
No, Sunday's a coming.
Sunday's coming. He lies.
Three days later, we got it coming. So, Mom, thanks for joining us. Ruva, thanks for your questions and for moderating and getting Mom on here. And too bad we couldn't get this on Facebook Live, but it'll be on there soon.
I love you, JW.
All right, love you, Mom. Thanks for joining in. Thank you, Ruva. And for everybody for the Mobile Impact, focus on your family, focus on your faith, and make that global impact. Have a great week.